On today's episode of The Door Report, powered by Alaco Finewood Floors, we're joined by Mitch Light, the college football editor for The Athletic, as we discuss Clark Lee's hires so far, defensive coordinator Jesse Minter, and why the offensive coordinator hire is taking longer than usual. We also discuss the COVID issues within Vanderbilt men's and women's basketball and the Vandy boys getting their season started on February 19th. We've got all that and much more coming right up here on The Door Report, powered by Alaco Finewood Floors. Let's ride.
You're listening to The Door Report, the premier Vanderbilt podcast for fans who believe black and gold. Commodore Nation, anchor down.
Welcome back into The Door Report. It is episode 66. It is Wednesday, January 20th, getting pretty deep here into 2021. We are presented by Alaco Finewood Floors. Will, we got a pretty good chunk of news today. No basketball this week. Hopefully we get it Saturday, but man, COVID is really kind of starting to flex its muscle on Vanderbilt.
Yeah, it's been flexing its muscle in Vanderbilt and really seems to be focused on Vanderbilt more than any other SEC schools, but we'll touch on that a little bit later.
Yeah, COVID's pretty active there on West End. We will touch on that a little bit later. We also will be joined by Mitch Light. He is the college football editor for The Athletic. We'll talk Vanderbilt football, Clark Lee, touch on a little bit of basketball with him. He's a Vanderbilt graduate as well, so we'll dive into Vanderbilt with him. Jesse Minter is expected to join Clark Lee's staff as the defensive coordinator, the Ravens DB's coach, so we'll touch on that. Vanderbilt A&M postponed, as we touched on. Will, we'll talk about that. Vanderbilt women's basketball, done. They're donezo, so we will touch a little bit on that and kind of the future of Stephanie White on West End. And the SEC baseball schedule, the conference schedule has been released, so we will also dive into that a little bit. But before we get to breaking news, don't forget to follow us on Twitter and Instagram, Door_Report on Twitter, Door.Report on Instagram. Like us on Facebook. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. Our podcast is available on Anchor, iTunes, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. And while you're at it, go give our podcast 5 stars and a review on iTunes. All right, it's time for breaking news.
Today's breaking news is brought to you by the Recycling Dudes. You may ask, who are the Recycling Dudes? Well, they're brothers Graydon and Chapman and their dad. Drew Smith, who is a Metro Nashville firefighter living in West Mead. The Recycling Dudes recognize the need for a service that would take glass to the recycling for busy homeowners who care about our environment. They pick up your glass, separate it, and take it to be recycled. They offer monthly service as well as one-time party pickup, starting as low as $10 per month. All you have to do is sign up on their website at recyclingdudes.com.
All right, well, Jesse Minter, he is expected to be the defensive coordinator. You've got loads of stats on this guy, and I'm impressed, Will. I mean, both of us have been pretty impressed by most of Clark Lee's hires so far. We are still waiting on an offensive coordinator. I think we're still waiting on Norval McKenzie to become official. But, you know, Mitch Light touched on it. He's being deliberate, and a lot of Vanderbilt fans have respect for, you know, for him for that matter. But, Will, give us the lowdown here on Minter. And you know, what kind of he brings to the table here for Vanderbilt.
Yeah, so we all know that he's the secondary coach or defensive back coach for the Baltimore Ravens, whose defense has been extremely good, and he's been their coach for 4 seasons. Before that, he was coaching at the collegiate level for 11 seasons, most recently at the collegiate level. He coached for Georgia State, served as their defensive coordinator. And some stats at the collegiate level before I kind of touch on his more recent statistics with the Ravens. In 2013, when he became coordinator, obviously Georgia State was starting up that moving that program to FBS, mm-hmm. starting up that program. They gave up 36.7 points per game and ranked 112th out of 125. Not great. In 2014, they were dead last, 128 out of 128. On the defensive side of the ball, giving up an astonishing, honestly, 43.3 points per game. And then you see his work kind of start to come into play.
Yeah.
In 2015, they moved up to 79th out of 128 with 28.3 points per game, mm-hmm. starting to get some of his recruits that fit his system in there, kind of what he wants. And then in 2016, Before he made the move to the Baltimore Ravens, they were only giving up 26 points per game, ranking 54th in the country. Not great, but when you look at from where they started 2 years prior, they were ranked dead last. And then after, his guys are obviously still there in 2017, they moved up to 48th. And then ever since then, it has been a precipitous decline for that Georgia State defense in 2018 and 2019, ranked in the bottom 10 in giving up points per game. And when he was the secondary coach for the Ravens this most recent season, obviously their defense is very talented in every aspect. But the Ravens faced the sixth most pass attempts against because they did tend to jump out to an early lead over teams being very talented with obviously Lamar Jackson at quarterback there. But they only allowed, even against those sixth most attempts, they only allowed the sixth most passing yards in the NFL and the fifth most passing touchdowns. So they were top five, top six in their pass defense. And another thing that hasn't really been touched on with Clark Lee is his specialty on the defensive side of the ball, at least at Notre Dame, has been stopping the run. They were ranked 16th in rushing yards per game allowed in the entire NCAA in the FBS. But their passing yards per game were 61st. So they were middle of the pack to below average in Power 5 facing the pass. So a major key for a defensive coordinator moving into that head coaching role isn't going to be finding an experienced defensive coordinator to take over that side of the ball, like what Lee is probably looking for in that offensive coordinator position. It's finding somebody to complement him and come into his system and basically integrate what his weaknesses are, Clark Lee's weaknesses, integrate a defensive coordinator with those strengths, kind of similar to what Mason tried to do with Jason Tarver. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that didn't work out for Mason, but hopefully we'll see some results that are a little bit different this go-around with Jesse Minter here moving into that defensive coordinator position.
Yeah, the first thing that jumps out to me with Minter, Will, is kind of the connection to Brian Kelly. He worked as a grad assistant under Kelly at Cincinnati, where Rick Minter, his dad, was previously the head coach. So Clark Lee and the Minter kind of family have definitely crossed paths. And you know, I think obviously Clark Lee is going to have a huge imprint on this defense. I mean, he's known for his defensive prowess, and it seems like to me that what might happen with these two is that Clark will be, I'm not going to say he's going to call defensive plays, but he's going to have a huge imprint, and Minter will be, you know, kind of that guy on the sideline motioning to his guys, because he was on the sideline for Baltimore as their DBs coach. So again, I love the hire. You know, I've been pretty satisfied with a lot of the Clark Lee hires so far. And Will, the defensive coordinator obviously is a huge hire, but the offensive coordinator is the one that, you know, we're really looking forward to. So, and we talked to this about with Mitch, you know, why it might be taking somewhat longer. And he said, he's just a deliberate guy. And you know, I would rather see him take more time than rush on a guy and we start questioning him, you know? So I think the offensive coordinator obviously is the most important hire, and who he, you know, who he gets is going to depend a lot on what we get from Ken Seals, because their relationship is going to be crucial.
Yeah, I think me and you are in agreement that Ken Seals is the guy for the next at least 3 years, possibly 4 years. So finding a guy that fits comfortably with Clark Lee, but also I think Ken Seals probably needs to be involved somewhat in this decision. From what we saw last year in an all-SEC slate as a true freshman, I think it's pretty undeniable that he was pretty impressive. Yeah. Regardless if you're a Vanderbilt fan or not, even if the stats don't jump off the page. I mean, that offensive line was a ragtag group that actually performed well. He had some good receivers, and his running game was pretty much nonsense. So it was an impressive year from Seals, and I think it's something that Vanderbilt's definitely going to want to build on, and certainly don't want to alienate him by choosing an offensive coordinator that doesn't really fit his skill set.
Yeah, and going back to the defensive side, one of the guys that that Clark and as well as Jesse Minter there on defense is going to be getting back is Donovan Kaufman, and he has been cleared to practice. Huge. Just a huge get, you know, because he was out, you know, after the first 2 weeks of last season. So again, Kaufman's athletic kid, and he is a guy they need definitely on the back end of that defense next season. But Will, let's roll on here. Vanderbilt men's basketball, their COVID issues continue. And Will, this is, you can, as a fan, you can look at this kind of a multitude of ways, but, you know, the facts are what the facts are. And the press release said, in quote, you know, due to a combination of positive tests, contact tracing, and subsequent quarantining of individuals in the program, this game has been postponed. Now, I think my thing is, Will, you know, I thought coming into this college basketball season, say a game's postponed, there's an automatic 2-week quarantine. And, I guess college basketball is kind of learning on the fly. They're kind of adjusting. They have to adjust at the, you know, fly by the seat of their pants. But the all signs point to this being a couple or a few guys that are still affected for Vanderbilt, and they just didn't have enough numbers to go against A&M.
Yeah, I don't know. We were discussing this beforehand. I don't know what Vanderbilt is doing wrong. We don't know the inner workings of it, but from football to men's basketball to women's basketball, we have had all sorts of issues. I don't know if the university has sanctioned kissing parties in the dorm rooms like we're in middle school again. I don't know what's going on, but it's across every program. And I can almost guarantee, I don't want to go on record saying this, got to knock on wood, I can almost guarantee that under Tim Corbin, you will not see pervasive COVID-19 issues associated with that baseball program.
No way.
And I don't know if it's the athletes, it's got to be the athletes disobeying the rules regarding their quarantining. I mean, that's the only thing that makes sense, or staff members. But between Vanderbilt men's basketball, I believe this is the third or fourth time already that they've had to pause activities due to COVID-19 positive tests. And then what we're going to be talking about in a second, which for the second podcast in a row, we're going to be touching on women's basketball, which I don't think has ever been done here on the Door Report. They've completely canceled the remainder of their season, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's something I don't think anyone really expected, you know, from a Vanderbilt team that, you know, head coached by Stephanie White, another season they were looking forward to having. You know, like you said, we don't talk a lot of women's basketball, but kind of back to the men's side, Will, these guys want to play. You know, Coach Stackhouse wants to play. This is, you know, for people, for anyone out there saying this is kind of the scapegoat to this team, you know, not wanting to play A&M, like just kind of like in football when a lot of people were kind of attacking Vanderbilt for, you know, this is a numbers thing. You know, the Vanderbilt's not going to go out there and put 7-8 guys on the court. You know, they can't do that. So, you know, that's kind of, you know, the attack that kind of they have to deal with right now, but we'll see if they play Saturday. Mitch made a joke. I said, they're playing Saturday. He goes, I don't know. So we will see. Noon is the tip time there against Arkansas on the SEC network. And Will, I mean, anything else on women's? I mean, their season's done. I guess what the conversation point is now is what's going to happen with Stephanie White, because, you know, is this an indictment on her, or is this something that Vanderbilt just had to do? So, you know, this doesn't really have anything to do with her. So, but yeah, I don't know.
It may be a little surprising to you. I actually would love to touch on women's basketball and Stephanie White. I can't say that I sit down and watch every game, but I do keep up with the results, and I do keep up with how that program is going. And if this was a coach not with the women's basketball program, I think you would be hearing a lot more calls for her job and people saying that it's unacceptable. And you already hear a lot from it. But when you look at this Vanderbilt women's basketball program, traditionally it was very successful under Melanie Balcom under Jim Foster in the late 90s, early 2000s. So Stephanie White's record so far is 13-55 in conference, 46-83 overall, with a 7-24, 7-23 season. And then she started out 0-3 in conference this year. And there were obviously other circumstances. They had some players that, due to medical issues, were not able to play this year, and they didn't have the numbers, like you mentioned, with the men's basketball program. But canceling the season is a pretty big step, and I would highly doubt that someone that has been as awful as Stephanie White has as the coach of the Vanderbilt Commodores, not just in record, but in creating a lot of distractions and negative media attention around that program relating to a lot of issues, whether it's social justice issues, political issues, a lot of people, Vanderbilt fans specifically, go to find an escape from that. Mm-hmm. And that hasn't really happened with that women's basketball program. And I would be really, really surprised if she's ever on the baseline of Memorial Gymnasium again.
Yeah, I think I'm in agreement. Well, we will have, you know, we'll wait and see on that. You know, obviously their season's done. And I can't imagine how those girls are feeling right now. And even Stephanie mm-hmm. White, you know, that's just so tough to deal with. So, you know, we'll see what does end up happening there. But again, Will, that it's just so tough because you look at, you know, the women's basketball and it, of course, men's basketball, we knew coming into this COVID type of season that Vanderbilt University, their athletic department, was not necessarily fit to kind of plow through this. You know, they're going to be treading water. So again, they tread a lot of water in football and they are continuing to tread more water. We'll see about baseball. Again, I'm in agreement with you, Will, that I don't think they'll have many issues because of their depth. So, and they're obviously a perennial powerhouse. But I will, let's touch on a little bit here. They have their in-conference schedule. Kumar Rocker, Jack Leiter are going to be fun to watch. And these two guys, they'll start it February 19th through the 21st against Wright State. And then they will open up against South Carolina. So, Will, it's going to be a fun season to watch. I think Vanderbilt fans are all looking forward to getting past the football and basketball season and watching a fun baseball team.
Yeah, I think every single Vanderbilt fan is ready to watch a well-run and talented program after this football season, this basketball season, men's and women's so far. And I can't say that I'm the in-depth guy for baseball. I obviously watch Vanderbilt, but outside of Vanderbilt, I don't watch a ton of MLB baseball. But I am looking forward to this season, and Vanderbilt, the Vandy boys, are still the defending and reigning national champions, even though there was no national champion last season. So I do want to see that played up, and it's always nice to actually see Vanderbilt put some W's in that win column.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. And they will start the SEC slate on March 19th against South Carolina. They will come to the Hawk. We'll be talking a lot more baseball a little bit later. But, Will, one more note before we close out and get to Mitch Light. Jeff Nixon, he is the Carolina Panthers running backs coach. Apparently, he's getting a lot of steam right now for the Vanderbilt OC opening. So, again, we'll continue to monitor that. That's what we have right now. But, Will, real quick, as we get into Mitch Light, this was really fun. And Mitch is kind of the go-to guy for Vanderbilt football because he has a lot of experience there on the sideline. I don't – you know, maybe not necessarily top guy. There's a lot of, you know, guys, you know, that love talking Vanderbilt football. But this was fun.
Yeah, he had a lot of similar opinions to me on who he wanted as the head coaching hire between Clark Lee and Will Healy, and his opinions on Vanderbilt basketball and kind of the direction that they could possibly be heading in and the direction of that football program. It was a really fun conversation.
No doubt about it. We're going to roll in right now with Mitch Light here on The Door Report, Episode 66, powered by Alaco Finewood Floors. We got Mitch Light, the college football editor for The Athletic, coming right up. Stay tuned. Before we get to our interview with Mitch Light, the college football editor for The Athletic, it's now time to send it over to Gary Scales for a few words on our presenting sponsor, Alaco Fine Wood Floors.
No matter what style you're going for, you can trust your flooring job to Alaco Hardwood Flooring. Take a walk through the woods in your home every day. Get your flooring job started today by logging on to Alaco Hardwood Flooring. .com or by calling 615-356-0303. Alaco Hardwood Flooring. Perfect floors, whatever your style.
Welcome back into The Door Report alongside Will Byram. And I'm Billy Derrick, and we are happy now to be joined by Mitch Light. He is the college football editor at The Athletic and formerly the sideline reporter for Vanderbilt football on the Learfield IMG Sports Network. Mitch, thank you so much for taking the time.
No problem, Billy. Happy to do it.
No doubt. And Mitch, I want to start, obviously, with Clark Lee, being named the new Vanderbilt football coach. A lot of excitement right now on West End, especially with a lot of the hires being made right now. I want to start from the beginning. When the coaching search began, what was your initial opinion on Clark Lee? And then when it was a done deal, what was kind of swirling through your head?
Well, I went into this, Billy, and, I follow, for my 18 years at Athlon Sports and then now at The Athletic, I kind of know a little bit about college football, and especially coaches. You know, one thing I did at Athlon is I paid a lot of attention to coaching hires, and every year in our magazine, I would write something ranking the first year hires. So I did a lot of deep dives into coaches. So I thought that going into this, and I've said this many times, that Vanderbilt was in a great position because there was just a really good crop of candidates, of, you know, mid-major coaches. You know, different schools swim in different waters. Auburn swims in a different water, different waters for their coach. Not that the guys that Vanderbilt was looking at wouldn't be good coaches at Auburn, but you know what I'm saying. Schools, their fans kind of demand a higher profile. The type of coach that Vanderbilt was looking at, I thought there was just a great pool. And Clark Lee was a name we all said right away. Will Healy was a name we all said right away. Jamie Chadwell. Lance Leipold at Buffalo is a great coach. If you don't know much about him, go look at his Wikipedia page. So I thought that unless there was just something out of left field and a crazy hire, I thought Vanderbilt was going to get a coach that made a lot of sense. As we all know, there's no guarantees in this. You know, just look at Jim Harbaugh at Michigan, Scott Frost at Nebraska, Chip Kelly at UCLA, three of the biggest quote-unquote slam dunks in college coaching in recent years, and all struggling for different reasons. So all you can do is hire a guy that you think is going to do a good job. So I went into it kind of 51% Clark Lee, 49% Will Healy, depending on the day of the week or the time of the day. And knew I, but again, I would have been happy with Lance Leipold.
Yeah.
Just a really good coach. Probably wouldn't have excited people as much, wouldn't have quote unquote won the press conference. Not that that really matters, but a good coach. And then just talking to people who know Clark Lee, I just became sold that he was the guy. I mean, you just didn't hear one bad word about him. Sure, he hasn't been a head coach, lacks that experience, but from an organizational standpoint, I know people who know some Notre Dame players. They all raved about him. The two people that cover Notre Dame at The Athletic, Pete Sampson and Matt Fortuna, mm-hmm. just rave about him. So I thought it was a hire that made perfect sense. Clearly a guy that wants to be here, has been pointing towards this job. So again, I thought, you know, so some years the candidate pool isn't as good. Like when Vanderbilt hired Derek Mason, it was Derek Mason and the former Arkansas coach, John blank on his name, Clemson offensive coordinator.
Yes. Chad Morris. Yeah.
Yeah, why can't we take that? So, you know, both those guys had fine resumes that fit the profile for Vanderbilt. But again, I think the pool was a lot better this time around. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Vanderbilt clearly maybe had more to offer, too. You know, it was maybe Vanderbilt's more attractive job based on some of the other things going on now than it was 7 years ago. So my long-winded answer, Billy, I thought it was Vanderbilt was in a position of strength and made a very good hire.
Yeah, you touched on that you were kind of 51% Clark Lee, 49% Healy, and I would put myself almost on that exact ranking. How you said by the day of the week it changed. But a lot of my not being more on board with Lee is something you're not supposed to do, but this is almost exactly the same conversations we were having when Derek Mason was hired, that he was an incredible fit coming from a program that had similar academic standards. Is there anything about Lee that kind of lessens that hesitance that you may have of having a guy that's very similar to the last head coach that didn't work out?
I understand that argument, but I think it's not fair to either guy. They're two different people, and you know, it's just they both have their strengths and their. I assume Clark Lee has weaknesses. I've never heard. No, I'm just kidding. I hate to use the word lazy. I'm not trying to insult anyone. That, you know, it's easy to say, oh, they hired a defensive coordinator from an academic school. Again, they're just different people. They have different strengths. They've come about this. They've come up through the profession different ways. So I know Candace Lee said going in that, you know, head coaching experience, offensive, you know, minded. But you can't pin yourself in like that. You need to hire the best candidate, and just because the last coach who you hired as a defensive coordinator from an academic school didn't work out, you know, what if Vanderbilt just didn't hire Clark Lee because he had that profile and then he goes to another school and has a great career? It's like, oh, we didn't, you know, we from the administration, oh, we just didn't hire him because he was too much like Derek Mason. So again, understand that argument. I just don't subscribe to it.
Yeah, 100% agree with exactly what you said. It's kind of a lazy argument, and I think Vanderbilt was almost put into a spot once it became known that Lee had real interest in that job and he had such a high profile as a candidate that Vanderbilt almost had to make this move, because if they didn't successful somewhere else, then they would be looking back for years and years saying we really screwed up that process just because we were scared of getting high. But kind of shifting over to some staff. It's expected that Jesse Minter, the secondary coach with the Baltimore Ravens, is expected to be named the defensive coordinator on his staff. Have you looked into Minter at all, or do you have any opinions about him as a coach?
I think Mitch Light broke up a little bit, so we'll wait till we get Mitch back. but Will, let's talk about it. Mitch.
Yeah, I mean, didn't claim to know a lot about him. Yeah.
We lost you for a second there. So whatever you're saying, we may have missed.
Okay.
Go ahead, Mitch.
Okay, because I thought I lost. Okay, so I didn't claim to know a ton about Jesse Minter. I'm familiar with his dad. I'm obviously older than you guys, and Rick Minter was a good head coach at Cincinnati for a long time, was at Notre Dame. But it's funny because I talked earlier about following coaches and looking up tenures. He was on that staff from Indiana State that went to Georgia State. And again, I guess I'm showing my age because I know this guy well, but I can't think of his name, the former Georgia State head coach as they were transitioning. Took over an Indiana State program, FCS, that was horrible. They're just like, you know how people say with Will Healy that Austin Peay was like the worst program in the country. Well, Indiana State was like the worst program in the country. And the staff did a great job in Indiana State, winning records, and then got hired to Georgia State. And when I Googled Jesse Minter, I was like, oh, he was on that staff. So, I mean, the head coach gets the responsibility. But again, so he's got a good pedigree. If you're coaching defensive football for the Ravens, you probably know what you're doing. So, and that's probably what took so long. You know, not a lot. Clark's done a very good job of keeping this close to the vest. And I assume that he had already talked to Jesse about this. And now that the Ravens lost, so, you know, it looks like it's going to happen. So, looks like a good hire, but it's not a guy that we've all seen at a different college, and we can go to CFB stats and look at his defensive ratings. You know, he's quote unquote just a secondary coach, but appears to be a solid hire.
No doubt. And you know, a lot of the other hires have seemed to be solid, you know, and a lot of Vanderbilt fans really getting excited about him. I want to ask you kind of about the staff right now as a whole. You know, there's still a few more hires to be made, Mitch, but what does that say about Clark Lee's pull on these coaches and kind of his reputation within the ranks of college football? Because I think a lot of Vanderbilt fans are realizing very quickly that he knows a lot of people and he's worked with a lot of high profile coaches.
Yeah. Trent Miles is his name. Not that you guys cared, but I was killing me that I couldn't think of his name. Google him and see how bad Indiana State was when he got there. No, I think it's impressive for a couple of reasons. The first three coaches that were made public or were reported on were Justin Lustig, you know, Breck Turfield, and Norvell McKenzie. All came from other Power Five schools, similar jobs. Uh-huh. So it goes to your point about, you know, knowing a lot of coaches respecting him, leaving good jobs. But I think it also says that Vanderbilt's clearly paying some money, you know, that these guys aren't going to leave for less money. So I think that's good. And I don't want to turn this into a, you know, ripping on Derek Mason, but we can all look back and say his first staff just wasn't very good. He had to make some immediate staff changes. And I went back and looked at this, every member of Mason's first staff, except for the linebackers coach who had been the defensive coordinator at San Jose State, basically took a big jump up to come to Vanderbilt, whether it was Katulski, who was the linebackers coach at Stanford, became the defensive coordinator. The wide receivers coach had been an assistant wide receivers coach with the Texans. So you guys are seeing what I'm saying, where the first hires that Clark Lee is making, these are lateral moves from other FBS programs or Power Five programs. Not that, you know, plucking a linebackers coach and making him a coordinator doesn't work out. It just kind of shows you, Billy, to your point there. So yeah. And I thought, you know, nothing's official yet, but you know, Pete Russomando looks like he's staying on as the offensive line coach. And if you knew Vanderbilt's personnel heading into the 2020 season based on the opt-outs and saw the injuries that it had during the season and watched the offensive line, I mean, I don't know much about playing offensive line, but I could tell that guy knew what he was doing. He was a good coach. So I was glad to see they held on to Pete Russomando. I think we're all glad to see Javon Hay back, a good recruiter and a guy we all liked watching play there. So it looks like he's being very deliberate. And that's probably going to be your next question about some of the speed of the hires. So go ahead. But so far, so good.
So far, so good. And Mitch, I do want to add kind of a smaller note. It doesn't seem like he's made kind of, you know, sometimes coaches, they make a hire where it's like, oh, you know, who's that? You know, we don't know this guy. But it seems like for Clark Lea, there hasn't really been any slip-ups. It's kind of been, okay, good job, Clark. And it's not kind of patting him on my back. Like, this guy really knows what he's doing. So, but yes, I do want to touch on the offensive coordinator. And you know, we're not bashing Clark for taking, somewhat longer on this hire. But, Mitch, why do you think that is? Because he did say that this is one of the more important hires, obviously, and it's for any head coach, but he said the strength coach and offensive coordinator are the two most important hires. Why do you think that process has taken a little bit longer than most?
Well, we don't really know. I think, though, he has been, the landscape has changed in recent years and this year specifically. Used to be, if you got named, like when Derek Mason was named head coach in mid-January, whatever it was, he had signing day in like 2 or 3 weeks. He had to get a staff or most of his staff named. Clark Lea's hired most of the signees. I'm sure they'll sign a few guys in February, but most of the class is signed. And because of the pandemic and the way Vanderbilt's structuring its semester, their students aren't coming back like whatever January 8th, like it usually is. It's January 25th or whatever. I know some of the football players are back. So it's not like you need to get your offensive coordinator in there because you have a staff, you have a team meeting on January 8th there. So I just think he's a deliberate guy. And I know what Mike Canales was one of the guys that he looked at from Seattle. So maybe that had something to do with the Seahawks still playing. Looks like he's not coming. So I think we all are very curious to who it's going to be, but I think he's just a deliberate guy and wants to do it his way. You know, if you ask him, would you have rather had your offensive coordinator hired? He'd probably say sure, but I don't think it's, you know, in 6 months or 2 years, it's not going to matter whether or not the offensive coordinator was hired January 10th or January 25th. So, I expect we'll hear something soon, but, you know, it's again, he's doing a good job keeping it close to the vest.
And we haven't really heard a lot about this, but there were a lot of players that transferred or opted out or chose to leave the Vanderbilt program throughout the season and even during the season. Have you heard anything about guys leaving the program since Clark Lea was hired? And he really kind of cleaned house for the most part outside of a couple guys and really replaced that staff. Have you heard anything about potential in that aspect?
I'm trying to think off the top of my head. It seems like most of the guys that announced they were transferring did so before Clark was hired. Maybe not. Maybe like Randall Haney, some grad transfers. And I know Vanderbilt fans think, oh, so many transfers. Believe me, I follow this stuff really closely. There's transfers all over the place with the, you know, first of all, with the, it hasn't passed yet, but most people think the NCAA will soon, they kind of kicked it down the road a little bit about the one-time free transfer thing where it'll be easier to transfer. You won't have to sit out a year. So, but I mean, Clark's clearly taking over a roster that's depleted. The numbers aren't great. I work closely with our South Carolina writer, Josh Kendall, and Shane Beamer's dealing with the same thing at South Carolina, a lot of opt-outs and transfers there. So it's not ideal. But to specifically answer your question, I don't think there's been a lot of guys that since he's been, you know, named head coach have departed.
Yeah, before we change over to the hardwood here, since it is actually basketball season, even though it feels like half of Vanderbilt's games have been suspended or postponed. What about our rival out east and this whole McDonald's bag full of cash and everything? I just want to hear some comments from you.
How much truth is there to that, Mitch?
I don't believe it at all. And, you know, it's made the rounds. Dan Patrick said it on his radio show, a very well-respected national radio voice. But you go back and look at a lot of things Dan Patrick said this summer about college football, about the Big Ten.
Yeah, who's his source, Mitch?
Yeah, he doesn't have a very good hit rate, so it's easy. Yeah, Tennessee was clearly recruiting violations. I mean, I kind of heard that was the word and all that stuff, but I would be shocked if there was cash in McDonald's bags, and a lot of Tennessee people pushed back, and these are the same people that said, yeah, we know we've got some stuff going on here. So, I mean, a lot of people have fun with it. There's clearly a lot of turmoil there, but specifically, I would find that very hard to believe. Hey, I might be wrong. Dan Patrick might have the best source, but that's stuff fun to talk about, but I don't believe
it. I know a lot of Tennessee people that actually laugh at it themselves too. So that's that's kind of where they're at right now. Let's go over to basketball, Mitch. It's been a very interesting season for the Commodores and year two of Coach Stackhouse. And I think some Vanderbilt fans were, you know, really curious to see what they would get from this team this year. From your point of view, perspective, watching them so far, what have been kind of the thoughts so far?
I find myself to be kind of a prisoner of the moment too many times watching this team. Like, I'll watch them play against Kentucky, and you're like, okay, I get it. I can see where this can be a good core. You know, I think Scottie Pippen's clearly a good, really good college player. I think Dylan Dessou is it looks like he's finally playing with some more consistency. I think Miles Studi has a chance to be good. There are some pieces here, but then you watch other games like the Tennessee game in the Florida game, and you're like, they're just lacking the overall talent department. I think it's clear that there is not enough overall talent on the roster, and you need to win some games, and you know, playing well is one thing, but at some point you got to turn the corner and win some games. And like, I had some games on my DVR the other night. I couldn't sleep half the time. I'm up half the night, and I put on the Vanderbilt Kentucky game from, I think it was Kevin Stallings last year.
Yeah.
And there's three on Vanderbilt's team. And this wasn't this was a team that underachieved, but there's three guys who played in the NBA in Wade Baldwin, Damian Jones, and Luke Kornet. And then Riley LaChance, Matthew Fisher Davis, and Jeff Roberson, three really good college players. And that's a good roster. Mm-hmm. And you just don't see the talent on the team this year. Now, you can make the argument about the NBA draft picks. I get it. The injuries. There's been made this point to a friend the other day. If you start over the Bryce Drew era and run it back 10 times, Vanderbilt's probably only in the situation one time. You know, exactly. with the injuries that led to Bryce Drew going winless, that led to Jerry Stackhouse, that led to Aaron Nesmith. I'm not trying to make excuses, but we all know the brutal injury luck this program has had. And then, you know, Tyron Lawrence getting hurt too. Not that he was a key contributor, but he's a talented kid who will be out at least until this point next year. So, I guess my answer is I can see a core that could be decent next year if it all stays together, but that's difficult in college basketball these days. I mean, very few rosters stay together. And we don't know how bad the COVID, you know, situation has affected this team. You know, it sounded like they didn't practice much over the holidays because that's when they had that long shutdown. And it's got to be very frustrating for the coaching staff to miss so many practice days and not knowing who's in and out in some of the injuries they had. I think Jerry Stackhouse is clearly a good coach. I mean, you watch them, the stuff they run, and at the end of the Mississippi State game, he had a great play set up. Vanderbilt's down two with 5 seconds to go. Would have been a 3-on-2 set up, and I don't know if the ball got deflected or Scotty just lost it. So, you know, for those of us, and again, I'm older than you guys, but you guys can remember, you know, a run of some really good basketball at Vanderbilt. It's, you know, it's not good to see the team struggling like this. And what's the answer? Better players or keeping this core together and watching them grow and develop. You know, we all know in college basketball, the goal for these coaches is to get old and stay old. You know, Vanderbilt's had some success in recent years having a veteran team, and they have not had a veteran team the last couple of years. So again, if this core can stay together, we'll see, you know, a normal year next year with these guys together, I think they have a chance to be decent.
Yeah, you hit on Kevin Stallings' teams that team underachieving, and that would be pretty much the story of the Kevin Stallings era outside of the 2012 year, and even in that year, the tournament didn't work out well. So that was a lot of the reason that Stallings left, was an underachievement with the talent that he had, and his teams consistently came out flat. And then you move to the Bryce Drew era, where it seemed kind of quit on him, and he did it, for lack of a better term. I'm sure that's not 100% true, but that's what it looked like from a fan's perspective. And then you come to Stackhouse, and it looks like the team plays hard, and the only thing that's consistent about them is being inconsistent in Scottie Pippen. Do you see Scottie Pippen making that jump to the pros, or do you see him remaining in college for the next foreseeable future?
You know, I'm far from a scout, but I don't see him being in a position to leave for the NBA right now. But it doesn't matter what I think or you think or Billy thinks. Well, it matters what Billy thinks, but no, it matters what Scotty thinks and his dad. You know, if they think he's ready, you know, we see a lot of guys. Like, I didn't think Saben Lee was ready for the NBA, and he's actually playing minutes for the Detroit Pistons right now. So good for him. I think Scotty needs to get bigger, stronger, and, you know, get better defensively. But he's clearly he has overachieved, or is much better than of any recruit Vanderbilt's had in recent years. You know, I think it's fair to say that he has overachieved his recruiting ranking as much or more than anyone. Maybe, you know, Luke Kornet, but that was a unique situation there. So, you know, I'd be surprised if Scottie Pippen declared for the draft after this year, but that's just me in late January saying it.
Yeah. Mitch, I do want to talk kind of about Stackhouse and kind of his ability to develop players. It's been kind of, you know, something to look at, you know, with Stackhouse and kind of his identity at Vanderbilt, where he's kind of took Neesmith in his second year, brought him to the NBA. Same thing with Saben Lee. If you look at kind of some of the younger guys on this team right now and kind of projecting, who do you think could be a couple of more of those guys that do kind of find their way to the NBA under Coach Stackhouse's kind of guidance?
I think Dylan Dessou is a guy that you could see playing in the NBA. You know, I'm looking at the stats right here in the roster. I mean, you know, we haven't seen enough from Tyron Lawrence or you know, Isaac McBride, who's clearly a good offensive player, but has hurt and hasn't played much. So I would think Dessou, and Studi looks like a player. He can shoot the ball. He's got some athleticism too. So those are two guys right there that I would say jump out. One guy who's, and I think we all like him as a player and seems like a good kid. I don't know what happened to Max Evans this year. I thought he was a guy that could average 10, 15 points a game as a senior. He's been very inconsistent this year. We all saw the LSU game last year, and it looks like Stack has been trying to get him out of his funk. He starts him, gives him minutes, and stuff. That, to me, that's been the big surprise. Like, I thought this year, if you could say Vanderbilt would be like a 500 team in the SEC, you know, what we need to go right? I'd say Scottie Pippen and Dylan Dessou would need to take that freshman year to sophomore year jump. Pippen clearly has. Looks like Dessou's doing it. DJ Harvey would need to be as good as Stackhouse thinks he is, and Max Evans would need to be a good senior. Harvey has shown signs lately, but has clearly not produced like they thought he would, and Max Evans has not been much of a factor. So a lot of things had to go right for this team to really be a kind of relevant in the SEC, and not enough of them have.
Yeah, we shall see. Obviously, A&M game was postponed. They will play Saturday against Arkansas. So, Mitch,
we're looking. Yeah, we think.
Hopefully, as of right now. We'll see if that game even does get played. But, Mitch, thank you so much for taking the time. Again, good luck with the coverage there at, I was about to say Athlon, the Athletic.
Yeah, I still make that mistake, so it's okay.
Hey, Mitch, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
All right, take care, guys.
Well, that does it for episode 66 of The Door Report, powered by Alaco Finewood Floors. First off, huge thanks to Mitch Light, the college football editor for The Athletic. He was formerly a Vanderbilt sideline reporter. He's a graduate of Vanderbilt, so it's always good to dive into Vanderbilt athletics with Mitch Light, someone who's dealt with Vanderbilt most of his life. So again, definitely a great interview with him. For myself, Billy Derrick, Will Byram, and Mitch Light, you've been listening to episode 66 of The Door Report, powered by Alaco Finewood Floors.